So architecture, look, for better or worse, can endure. Buildings, you may have noticed this, buildings are not ephemeral. Perhaps that's why architecture matters. We will put this to Tim Ross. Now, Tim is that strange combination of comedian and design nerd, and perhaps the only person in this country, if not the world, to attempt live shows dealing with architectural legacy. I guess somebody had to do it, eh, Tim?
Someone had to. You're right. You know, it's not a very crowded field that I live in, that's for sure.
Well, you've carved a niche. You've got a show touring the country called Designing a Legacy, and it deals with buildings.
Yes. And, you know, surprisingly enough, there's lots of people out there that like architecture, which is nice. So, without having started, really.
Well, we all have brushes with it, don't we? I
mean, yeah, we all do. Whether or not we notice it or not is another thing. So people come along, they experience being in a house that they normally wouldn't be able to go to.
Right.
Or they can come along in a way that you wouldn't normally be able to go to. You know, I've been to plenty of open houses for when, you know, various organisations have their open house programs, and you line up and you take your shoes off and you walk through in a group of 15, which is lovely. But I always thought, imagine if you could sort of go to a party of sorts or a performance in one of these houses. So that started that. And you realise that what connects people with architecture and why people like domestic architecture more than office buildings. I think we like civic architecture. Mm. But, you know, not everyone says, I've got my favourite house, but not everyone's got their favourite hospital. and there's lots of reasons for that. But mostly all our memories are made in places like, you know, we're more inclined to, you know, we will remain to say as universities over high schools in some ways. And I think architecture's got a lot to do with that. And we'll romanticise our own houses because that's where all those formative things happen. It's where our treasured memories happen. And they become vessels for our memories. And domestic architecture has far more stories than commercial architecture or better stories or more heartwarming stories.
We will always, though, have those stories, those recollections, those feelings about the places in which we live, regardless of whether they were, you know, architecturally conceived or not.
Absolutely. And I suppose the process and the idea of this new series live show, and which has got six films in it, is about people who grew up in houses that were designed by some of our great architects and how they had a different impact on their lives. And so when it comes to this idea that every one of us has to say goodbye pretty much to our family home at some stage, and depending on your stage of life, it's a big deal or it's not a big deal, but we're always drawn to driving past it, I think. But what makes those people realise that their house is somehow more important, that it's had more of an impact, or it has more of an impact on the wider public? And I think, you know, you guys focused on the Esmond Dorney House a few weeks ago on the program in Tasmania, the house in Hobart on top of Porter Hill.
Indeed, yep.
And it's one of the houses that we feature. The house that is sort of round, it was a series of houses, they all got burnt down, and the final one was in 1979, and a big glass house. And it's a house that's captivated the general public for years, not just in Tasmania, but all over the place
That's an interesting aspect here, because there's a part of growing up, let's say, in a famous house that sort of inverts that relationship. You know, we move on from houses. In a way, this is a building which has a transitory population of various people. The building is sort of centred here rather than the people within it.
Yeah, and I think we, you know, not many people grow up in a house where people stand out the front and take photos or stop to look at it. And these houses...
For good reasons.
I mean, the houses we feature, there's Ken Woolley's first house in Sydney that he designed in 1962, designed this ABC building that I'm speaking out of right now. That's a house that people have always turned up to look at. And this is a through line through all the stories. So these are when private architecture becomes public architecture, when it excites people beyond the people that grew up in those walls. And the people who lived or continue to live or have lived for a period of time know that and feel that there is some sort of responsibility to the general public to allow access or to maintain the legacy of that property. There's all sorts of different ways that people look at that idea of the legacy of their own home. But I suppose the one that I like the most is the story of Victoria Grounds, who's Roy Grounds' daughter. And, you know, Roy, one of our great architects, yep. Shine Dome, NGV, So Roy designed a house in the late 1930s for the Ramseys, and they were the Kiwi boot polish family. So they're loaded, and he designs a small house for them in Bandalaya Beach and the Mornington Peninsula in Melbourne. And the idea, Betty Ramsey, they're rich, so they've got this, oh, there's servants everywhere, you know, and she's got these two sons. And she asked Roy to design, they could have designed the biggest house in the world. She asked Roy to design this rather petite house because she wanted her boys to be in a small house on the beach that didn't have servants in it. And Roy had just come back from Hollywood where he'd been designing sets for some pretty dreadful movies. But while he was there, he came in contact with all the greats of California modernism at the time. And comes back and he designs this place. And while he designs that house for the Ramseys, Betty and Roy fall in love. And so architect and client. She's married, he's married. The whole thing blows up and it's the shock of Melbourne, the scandal of Melbourne society. And they move into the house together. And then after the war, Victoria, Roy's and Betty's daughter, is born. And then in the early 1950s, they move out of the house. He builds his famous house, the Hill Street House in Toorak, that he won all the awards for. Circular courtyard in it, the one that was, they always say, it was the idea, where he got the idea of what he did with the NGV. And 50 years later, the house that everyone thought was missing or fallen off the cliff or had been destroyed comes up for sale. And Victoria's living in Canberra and she's got her own architectural practice, very successful. She sees it's for sale and drops everything and buys it. She buys her old family home back. And because she says that it was where her parents were the most happy. And it's got very little to do with architecture, and that's what really surprised me. I'd read the story, I'd spoken to it before, and when I sat down and I was filming with her, she just describes it in the most beautiful way, this idealised childhood, being on the beach and her mother ringing a bell when it was time to come up the hill, and her parents being incredibly happy there. And it's got very little to do with architecture.
And the house, but the house has great presence.
Yes. I describe it, it's the closest I've come to in this country of sort of 1930s European modernism. It's like it's so cleverly designed. It's three stories, tri-story and on two levels, basically. It's a two-story house and tri-level. And it doesn't have a hallway and it's one room wide. And it was originally nestled into the tea trees there at Ranelagh Beach. And it's just a beautiful little house. Hard to describe, and people see photos of it and don't get it. And then you get inside it and you go, oh, wow, no wonder Robin Boyd said it had the most important living room in the country, because it has, its dimensions are perfect. Its scale is just to die for.
Is there a certain sort of perfection in the work of this moment, or that, you know, that early to mid-century modern? Did that crack something, especially in these domestic spaces?
Yes, and I think, you know, they were always looking forward. You know, this is what we forget. I mean, most of what we mourn, I suppose, people of a certain generation, when we look at modernism, is an idea that we live in a progressive country. And that's what they symbolise to us, I think. I think we feel like there's a moment where everything was moving forward, that we would always move forward. And it's very hard for people of a certain generation to feel like we're not moving forward. And I think having a perfect house where the size is just right, it just feels right. It's hard to understand why, but you just walk into a room and you go, oh, this is nice. I don't know why. The best houses do that, and the best houses you go into feel like it's whoever's lived in that place, and it doesn't matter what their furniture is, it's a life well lived, a life well collected. And I think that's what we respond to.
There's a rather ripe irony, though, in a modernist aesthetic becoming this thing of nostalgic reflection, sort of lost and pickled in a moment.
Yeah, and today you see people and they'll put properties up for sale and they'll style them with an inch for their lives. Bring in the furniture to take those photos. And, of course, the same thing was happening in the 1950s. You know, Harry Seidler would bring in all the furniture for his photos, and Max DePayne would snap away, and then the furniture would go back in the truck.
What could possibly go wrong?
And then everyone would bring in their, you know, funny old doilies and bits of colonial furniture and things they borrowed from all over the place. And so when people buy...
Mum's dining setting.
That's exactly right, and so you should too. So back to the grounds house, and Victoria didn't want to create a family museum, and so she didn't recreate the house as it was in the 1930s. And I think there's something really special about that. And she's right to do that.
What do you live in, Tim?
So I've got a late 1950s modernist home in Sydney. furniture collector,
yes,
I wanted somewhere to put my furniture, and luckily enough,
what came up
15 years ago, a house turned up that no one wanted to buy because no one was really interested in 1950s modernist homes.
I mean, it is important. This is the thing to talk about these places and to explain their significance because they're vulnerable.
Yeah, they are vulnerable, and they are as important, if not more important now than buildings that are 100 years old or 200 years old or whatever, because they're still sitting in our memories. And I think one of the things that's really overlooked about the great modernist buildings and the simple modernist buildings of the 1950s and 60s and what they represent in terms of our history, again, has very little to do with architecture. It's to do with family, is that those houses are the last houses that people's parents and grandparents actually built themselves. I think that's an important story. I mean, we outsource everything today, but to think, you know, there was all those cliches come up. There was lack of materials. You couldn't get people to build things for you. So mums and dads are out there and, you know, building all those things to self. I think we've talked about the Sirius building in Sydney before, but the architect of that, he taught his wife to lay bricks because they every house, his wife laid every brick in, you know, four different houses or something. I think those stories are great.
There's a great humanity in this.
Yeah, part of our identity is, regardless of what it looks like, if we stop being a nation of people who think they can build a deck, it's all over.
Tim Ross is custodian of these national dreams of houses and spaces, and he's bringing that to a stage near you. He is on the road nationally. Check that out, Designing a Legacy. Melbourne Design Week starts February 13 or thereabouts. We will put all the details and links on the blueprint page on the RN website. Tim Ross, thank you so very much.
Always a pleasure, Jonathan. Take care.
It's Blueprint on Radio National.